Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior years shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. Today's program continues the interviews with Next Avenue's 2019 Influencers in Aging. Previous topics included ageism in the field of advertising, modern elders and intergenerational collaboration, and advocating for people with dementia. Today, you'll meet Ronald Long, whose passion is keeping older clients free from elder financial abuse, Mary Pfeiffer, psychologist and author who would like to do away with age-segregated society, and Karen Etkin, who specializes in technology for older adults, or gerontechnology. And so we begin with Ronald Long, Keeping Older Brokerage Clients Safe from Elder Abuse, by Richard Eisenberg. 2019 Influencer in Aging Ronald Long, the St. Louis-based director of Wells Fargo's Elder Clients Initiatives team since 2014, created what's become a key brokerage industry tool to protect older investors from elder financial abuse. Long and his team originated the In Case of Emergency form, so advertisers could contact someone if they thought their client had cognitive difficulties or might be a victim of elder abuse. Now the brokerage industry's self-regulator, FINRA, or Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, is using a version called the Trusted Contact Form. The need is urgent. Annual losses from elder financial abuse in the U.S. are estimated to exceed $36 billion. In April 2019, Long, a former Securities and Exchange Commission district administrator, broadened his scope to assist elder customers of all Wells Fargo divisions, heading up the company's new Elder Client Initiatives Center of Excellence. First question from Next Avenue. When did you first get interested in elder fraud and elder abuse? In 2005 and 2006, I was hearing anecdotal concerns of financial advisors. The biggest concern from the advisors was what to do with a client who has diminished capacity. Well, how did your Elder Clients Initiative team start, and what does it do? This team came up mainly from the numbers. In August 2010, we told advisors to count the number of elder fraud concerns coming in per month, and it averaged about 30. By 2014, we started consistently crossing 100 concerns a month. At that point, we thought it would make sense to have a centralized place for these concerns. And we thought, can we do more to promote training and guidance? And could we change the regulatory and legislative landscape as well? Wells Fargo, the first financial institution to do this. Well, I think we were first, or one of the first for sure. How big a problem is elder financial abuse today, and why? The problem is enormous. 10,000 boomers are turning 65 each day, and some are about to turn 75 next year. So dementia and diminished capacity is increasing as a natural outgrowth of aging. And some of these people are folks with money and internet access, which gives an instant doorway to the bad guys. Is elder financial abuse growing? My sense is that it is growing. There's also growing awareness, with more effort trying to get elder financial abuse reported and to put in mechanisms to slow it down or stop it. You came up with something in 2015 that turned into FINRA's Trusted Contact Form. Tell me about that. Well, we called our form the In Case of Emergency form. One challenge is there are two things we have to do: maintain privacy if a person has an account at Wells Fargo, and by law, we have to properly and faithfully exercise our client's orders. So if a client says his friend, a Nigerian prince, says send $50,000, our obligation is to do it. We felt if we had a trusted name from the client on file, that solved the first hurdle. We could call the client's son or daughter to help with the second part, delay the transaction until he or she was able to talk to mom or dad and convince the parent that the prince will never send the parent any money. Everybody is asked about an account opening. Would you like to name a person in case of emergency? And we try to repeat that every 3 years. We also encourage getting a name for our existing clients. Advisors talk about it at their quarterly annual meetings with clients. Have you thought about doing this? We shared the idea with industry groups, talked to our state regulators, and visited Adult Protective Services agencies. Then we talked to FINRA. They were very receptive, so FINRA in one fell swoop took both sides and ideas. Their trusted contact form was a good feature, coupled with a new ability to hold transactions when elder abuse or diminished capacity was suspected. Well, what has been the effect? We have folks who say, "Thanks for contacting me. I had no idea." One son said, "I think my mom wouldn't be alive but for your contacting us." What more do you plan to do to combat elder financial fraud? We will do more internal training. We now have formed the Elder Client Initiative Center of Excellence across the company. It will be an entrepreneurial elder abuse prevention program. And we would like to reach the general public to get awareness out there. I think having families talk about elder financial abuse is going to be central vaccine to fighting it. Some people might say, how can Next Avenue honor someone at Wells Fargo after the company agreed to pay over $500,000 to customers affected by its improper sales practices? Okay, that black eye does exist. What we're doing consistently in the elder space is building trust with our customers. We have been consistent and dedicated to protecting our clients from losing their hard-earned funds to scam artists. Next Avenue asks, if you could change one thing about aging in America, what would it be? Well, I would change the isolation and loneliness that comes as a result of the three D's: death of a partner, divorce, and disability. Research shows that loneliness and isolation are contributing, if not primary, factors in the rise of elder financial abuse. The most urgent need for our aging population is to wage a concerted battle against loneliness and help build defenses against potential abuse. With families increasingly living thousands of miles apart, having a sense of community is essential to helping protect and live happier and often longer lives. And now we're going to Mary Pfeiffer, The Cultural Anthropologist Navigating New Currents by Julie Fitzinger. In 1994, Mary Pfeiffer wrote Reviving Ophelia, Saving the Selves of Adolescent Girls, a groundbreaking, best-selling book examining the complicated lives of teenage girls. It was the result of her work as a clinical psychologist with this age group, and it led Pfeiffer to receive the American Psychological Association's Presidential Citation. Earlier this year, Pfeiffer and her daughter, Sarah Pfeiffer Gilliam, collaborated on a revised 25th anniversary edition. Pfeiffer, 71, has written an equally compelling bestseller about an older group, women rowing north, navigating life's currents and flourishing as we age. A cultural anthropologist, Pfeiffer is the author of 10 books, including Seeking Peace and Writing to Change the World. Next Avenue's first question. Publishers Weekly called Women Rowing North the next boomer Bible. Why do you believe the subject matter of your book is resonating so strongly with readers? Her answer. I think it was the right time for this book. As a cultural anthropologist and psychologist, I've spent years looking at how culture impacts our lives. And for an aging population of women, there are issues around how they feel about themselves based on what the culture expects. So, many of us are not going to age as our parents did. There are many examples about growing older from the lives of my own parents that I still think of often, but on a practical day-by-day basis, our expectations for life are much different today. I am also really embedded in this community. Many of my friends are over 50. In the introduction, you write that women are much more complicated, intense, and fascinating than most of America's stories suggest. Since the release of the book, how has the feedback you have received from readers borne this out? One of the things that has surprised me is that I've received a lot of mail from men who have read the book and appreciated it. From women, I've heard that my book has validated their own stories. Your philosophy is my philosophy, they say. I've also heard from others who have been feeling dispirited but are now encouraged. One woman sent me a touching email that said, "This book is going to help bring me back to life. I am going to retire." Many women feel close and want to tell me how much the book meant to them. I've had some write to me and say that they'd like to be my friend, which is nice. As you point out, resilience is a powerful tool as we get older. But some people are inherently more resilient than others. If people don't perceive themselves as being resilient, how can they better develop that mindset? In my work as a therapist, I often talk to people about what they could do to help themselves if they hit a rough spot. One thing that's important is to hit a pause button. Just be with the experience for a while. For me, I fail a lot because I try a lot of new things. I always ask myself about what I learned. There's a way to reframe any experience to make it better. When it comes to resilience, I also think perspective makes a difference. How important is this setback on a scale from 1 to 10? Of course, some things are a 10, losing a family member, receiving a cancer diagnosis. But most things are a 1 or a 2. To be resilient is to turn away from sorrow, loss, or an obstacle and turn toward something better. If you think you can handle life, you can handle life. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You close Women Rowing North on the topic of bliss and illumination. Why can the bliss of older age be more powerful or poignant than any that we've experienced previously in our lives? For me, the experience of bliss is very specific. It's that moment when you feel surrounded by golden light. Everything in the moment is perfect and the time has stopped. I still remember being a child, lying on a blanket under a tree in our yard, looking up at the leaves and the light darting in and out. That was a moment of bliss. However, I didn't have many moments of bliss in my mid-years. I was always on the go. Bliss doesn't happen at 80 miles per hour. It happens when you stop or when you have slowed down and are more prone to have quiet moments in your day. You've opened space in your life. I'm still busy, but every morning I drink a cup of coffee and watch the sun come up. That is bliss. There is also bliss in love. I've been married forever, but every now and then I will really see my husband, this old man I've known all my life. He'll be sitting in a chair doing a crossword puzzle, and he looks beautiful to me. That is love and illumination at the same time. You are a firm believer in the importance of generations being connected. Can you explain why this is so vital? We are such an age-segregated society. So many grandparents live a continent away from their grandchildren. Society has developed to have grandparents engaged with their families. For example, I dislike destination weddings. They take the bride and groom away from older people if they can't travel, and the event takes the couple away from the community that loves them. Everyone should be together to celebrate. I am greatly enriched by the lives of my grandchildren, and I'd like to think they are enriched by me. Older and younger generations can teach each other how to love, how to think, and how to work together to make society work well. And the question, if you could change one thing about aging in America, what would it be? I would like to see integrated public spaces and integrated schools for ages 2 to 80. I would like to see everything be multi-generational, so there would be many opportunities to connect within communities. I'd like to do away with our age-segregated society. And now moving to Karen Etkin, Discovering the Intersection of Gerontology and Technology, by Julie Fitzinger. Karen Etkin, 32, calls herself a gerontologist by training and a tech enthusiast by nature. In 2015, Etkin, who lives in Tel Aviv, received a master's degree in gerontology from Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, and 2 years later founded the gerontechnological.com. Etkin received Left Intuition Robotics after 3.5 years, where she had worked as a researcher and robot tamer and helped develop LEQ, the social companion robot for older adults. Etkin is now doing public speaking and working as a consultant to several organizations looking to implement technology for aging populations. She has also created additional content for the Gerontechnologist, including video and a podcast. Next Avenue's first question, can you define the term gerontechnologist? Well, gerontology is a very traditional profession. In recent years, however, with the advent of new technology, tech solutions for older adults have become a hot-button issue in the field. The technologies are increasingly known as gerontechnology, or age tech. Although my professional training is in gerontology, technology for the older adult is at the very heart of what I do. In a post that you wrote for thegerontologist.com, you make the case that older adults have great interest in technology and trends. Often, there's a perception that this isn't true. Where do you think that misconception comes from? When I wrote, "Who said older adults don't like technology?" my intention was to challenge what is a common misconception. The belief that older adults aren't receptive to new tech has several origins. First, the way older adults are usually depicted in the media, unfortunately, ageist and not truly representative of that demographic. Second, we have a tendency as a society to associate old age with frailty, sickness, and disability, when in fact many older adults still have a healthy and active lifestyle in their 70s and 80s. Finally, we have to remember that the term older adults refers to people 65 years and older, which includes baby boomers as well as centenarians. It's a very heterogeneous population, and we can't put everyone in the same box and assume that they'll all share the same needs and aspirations. Tell us about LEQ, the social robot designed by Intuition Robotics. What are the specific ways she can help reduce feelings of loneliness in older adults? Anyone working with older adults over a prolonged period of time knows that loneliness and social isolation are huge issues with real ramifications for emotional and physical health and well-being. I first encountered this during my work with nonprofits, so when Intuition Robotics offered me a position as their in-house gerontologist and first employee to help develop a proactive social robot for older adults, I jumped at the opportunity. Many people have the misconception that LEQ and other social robots are meant as replacements for real social interaction, but this couldn't be further from the truth. Essentially, LEQ facilitates easier communication between the user, the older adult, and family members through text messages, photo sharing, and video calls. The fact that she's voice-activated means that it's all very intuitive. This leads to better communication with family and friends and helps the user stay engaged in society. LEQ can also keep users entertained with curated music and videos, tell them what's on the news, provide cognitive stimulation and fun with trivia games, offer facts and quotes, fetch information from online resources like any conversational AI or artificial intelligence agent. Do you think people are skeptical about the ways social robots can have an impact on the lives of older adults? And if so, why and what would you say to change their minds? One of the biggest challenges is that social robot technology faces today is prejudice. One place where this isn't the case is Japan, where people have been taught to think of robots as friendly helpers rather than scary Terminator-type entities. I think that's just like any other prejudice. This needs to be addressed consciously and is part of a broader discussion about the role technology ought to have in our society. That being said, I find that although people resist social robots by saying that they're no alternative to human interaction, those same people usually admit they don't spend enough time with their older relatives. The reality is many older adults today already rely on a machine to help them feel less lonely. Their TV. Personally, I view LEQ and other products like her as a means of bridging the gap between generations. And having seen this technology in action, I'm a true believer. Prior to your work with Intuition Robotics, you worked with underprivileged older adults. Can you describe that work? How did that experience help lead you to want to continue to work with an aging population? I worked in several NGOs, non-government organizations, with older adults, some of whom were Holocaust survivors. The main purpose of my work was to provide them with the basic daily needs of adequate nutrition and access to medical services, as well as making sure that they got all their rights from the government. What I found was that loneliness and social isolation were huge issues, and that the most important thing our volunteers provided them with, even more valuable than the material aid, was companionship and human interaction. That experience led me to continue working with the aging population because I realized just how much impact one person can have if they are in the right place at the right time. As someone who is quite a bit younger than the demographic you are serving, what do you uniquely bring to your role as a gerontologist with expertise in technology? Since I grew up with technology, it has shaped the way I view the world, and I can't imagine what it's like to live without it or not have access to everything that it has to offer. I think this is what I bring to the role. Tech is such an integral part of my life that I'm unwilling to accept the idea that others simply can't access it. That, by the way, includes myself. While I'm just 32, I will grow old one day as well, and I'd like to do so in a technological setting. You live in Tel Aviv. Do you perceive that there are differences in how loneliness and social isolation are manifested among older adults in Israel versus the United States? Yes and no. On the one hand, Israel is a very small country, and people usually live fairly close to their family, within driving distance. In the U.S., families can be much farther apart. The long distance can make it challenging for them to meet often, so they may only get to see each other several times a year during holidays. On the other hand, because we're so geographically close here in Israel, there's an expectation that we'll see our parents and grandparents more often. And while that does happen, it doesn't necessarily meet the needs of our aging population. Everyone is working long hours. Israelis work longer hours than the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, average, and most families don't see each other more than once a week. Older adults in Israel are not immune to social isolation and loneliness. In 10 years, how will technology help older adults thrive? What kinds of change can we expect to our daily lives? Well, hopefully, we will have broadband and Wi-Fi in every home and in every senior living community. That's a baseline requirement for most of the products that I deal with and cover. But even without these basic requirements, I believe that AI and the continued miniaturization of electronics, as well as intuitive voice-first interfaces, are going to help us create smart, efficient products that will serve everyone, not just the elders. Well, here is that end of interview question. If you could change one thing about aging in America, what would it be? Well, I'm not American, so commenting on uniquely American issues seems inappropriate to me. However, if there's one thing that I could change related to the issue of aging that's a problem in Western society, it's ageism. I would love to see society, in general, become more open and accepting of the idea that we're all going to age one day. If we're lucky, it's ridiculous to discriminate against a group that we're all going to be a part of, isn't it? And just a quick information piece from Sharon Emick helping vintage workers succeed. She says, one morning I woke up and realized that these people I had encountered with so much experience and access to new technology were capable of working from home. So I needed to find out if they were interested in that. I reached out to the National Alliance of Insurance Agents and sent out a survey to 5,000 people over the age of 50 in the industry. We got 3,000 responses almost right away. There's a fallacy that older workers aren't computer literate. They are, and over the years, I have tested thousands of people. As people age, they are becoming more computer literate because they are the ones who've experienced all the upgrades, all of the software changes over the years, more so than the younger workers. And so Sharon Emick certainly agrees with our previous interviewee. Well, I can't help but be grateful for those individuals whose ambition is to make life not just easier, but more productive, safe, and satisfying for our senior population. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.